Welcome to Unlawyerly, where we talk about life, the pursuit of happiness, and some law. This is Ramin. It's time to get unlawyerly.
So at the University of Virginia, at the Aquatic Fitness Center, AFC, right when you go in and you're about to check in, there's a quote. And for anyone of you who may have gone to UVA or know someone who has, everything's about Mr. Thomas Jefferson. Everything. So sure enough, there was a quote from Thomas Jefferson regarding working out. The quote goes something like this. Give about 2 hours every day to exercise, for health must not be sacrificed to learning. A strong body makes a strong mind. So every time that you went in, you would see that quote. And at UVA was when my workout regimen truly began, where it became a part of my life, became a habit. And you want to know who my workout partner was? Sure enough, it was that same friend who asked me that profound question, how do you find success? And yes, I had other friends. It's just this guy played a major role in my life. One of the days we were out working out at the AFC, and his cousin comes. His cousin just became a first year. And he was a big dude. And as we're working out, he looks at me and says, Ramin, you're a sleeper. I'm like, what do you mean I'm a sleeper? And he tells me that I can lift more than one would think by looking at me. And I wasn't offended by it. I said, damn right, I'm a sleeper. Because the fact of the matter was that I took working out seriously. It really became a part of me. And the thing is, you know, whether I knew it at that point in time or not, working out was really more for my mental health than physical. Now, at that point in time, mental health wasn't where it is today, and of course, it has a long way to go. But for me, it was more of course, the physical, but more so the mental aspect of it. Now, you guys may be asking yourself, well, what does physical exercise have to do with why you left Big Law and why you decided to retire at 36? Did you not get enough time to work out? And the thing is, no, that's not really the reason. But it provides a good segue, because we were talking about value systems in the first part of the episode 2 of the series. And we talked about how the value systems for it to truly work needs to be constants in our life. And that's why for me, family came more in the forefront. Making time, being an active participant, being present. Well, well-being was another and is another pillar of my value system. So this is a good segue for us to talk about that. And in order to fully appreciate and understand how it played a role with my decision, we need to talk about the Big Law lifestyle. Now, if I were to ask anyone, even myself, because I'm a first-generation lawyer, and I didn't really know much about law firms or regional firms or any of that. I learned a lot of it, especially during the time when I was getting ready to interview. If I were to ask you, what do you think of a Big Law lawyer? Or what do you think about working in Big Law? There's a few things that are going to come up. One, you get paid a lot of money. Two, you're likely going to have a very hectic schedule. You're going to be constantly working. Three, you may think of the stereotypical lawyers that are not very nice. And the thing about that is, a lot of that can be true. Yes, Big Law lawyers, you get paid a lot of money, you work a lot. There are and can be lawyers that are not nice, and I don't think it's really attributable just to Big Law. But those are the types of things that even when I started my journey to Big Law, I was thinking about. And when I was starting to interview for law firms, I kept a lot of that in perspective. I kept a lot of that in mind because I wanted to make sure that my fit at a law firm was going to be a place where I could thrive, where I could be around people who were relatively down to earth. And so when I was interviewing, I made sure that I asked pointed questions that get to that. And I was fortunate enough, and I was very grateful that the firms that I placed, really down-to-earth people. The firm itself, the firms, I should say, were ones where they were receptive to listening to the associates, listening to the lawyers, listening to the business admin. And when I started work, I remember this, the summer after, you know, school was done, bar exams were taken care of, at least for me with the California bar, I was getting ready to work. And I was getting ready for a very crazy schedule, like hit the ground running, rubber meets the road, going 100 miles per hour. And when I started working, I realized that it wasn't like that. It was relatively slow. And I was confused. So is this big law? And what I soon enough learned was it's very cyclical. Now, yes, there are practice groups where they were very busy. And when I was doing my summer associates program, I purposefully stayed away from groups that I realized there was immediate or close to immediate burnout, especially at the first year level. And the way I knew that is because I came with practical, real world past experience where I had worked previously. And I just told myself, I'm not going to be in a group where I am going to burn out within a year or two. So I made purposeful decisions as far as what I was going to be doing. And it was interesting because when I interviewed, the hiring partner said, look, Ramin, you have experience as a CPA in business. You run your own business and regulatory as it pertains to energy. What do you want to do? And I ultimately decided I wanted to do energy, but transactional level work. So I started out in cross-border transactions. And then from there, I moved more into renewable when the practice groups slightly changed. But sure enough, the work was very cyclical. And so during the periods when we were slow. And they encouraged us to keep busy. And so one of the things that I did was pro bono. And pro bono became a very important part of my practice, whether it was the asylum work that I was doing, work for veterans, Social Security Administration. Even though I was not a litigation lawyer, I was a transactional lawyer, the pro bono aspect of it, I kept alive and well to do more things on the litigation side, and I found it very fulfilling. But then during the times that we were busy, it was busy. The stereotypical way that you think about it, emails coming nonstop, deal closings, running 100 miles per hour. And that's just the way that life was. When it was busy, it was very busy. As my career progressed, it no longer became cyclical. The practice group was thriving, there was more work, and trust me, it's better to be busy than not, especially with big law, especially if you are working in an environment where there are billable hour requirements, or even if there aren't requirements, you want to show that you're productive. And the way that you're going to learn is by being busy, having work. And there is a lot of self-learning. You have to be able to take the initiative to teach yourself, and that's what I did. But one of the things that constantly stood out for me in big law was the fight or flight nature of the work. What do I mean by that? Think about it in a situation where, God forbid, you're in a situation where you're about to be attacked or your instincts are telling you something's going to happen. Your body and mind naturally knows it's time to kick into gear and get you to safety. Fight or flight. And then your body pauses. It stops once you're out of that situation. Your body is naturally able to do that. But when you're in an environment where it's constant fight or flight, where you're constantly feel like you're in survival mode. And it does feel like that. And maybe it's not unique to just lawyers. I'm just speaking from my own experience and from other people that I spoke to. Constant fight or flight is not sustainable long-term wise. The reason being is that it ends up taking a big toll on your mind and your body. So what did I do? Because obviously it wasn't that I was working in big law for 1 or 2 years. I was working for about 6 years. One thing that I did was I took what I had learned from UVA, that working out, and I did my best every single day to fit in some time to work. During part of my career, one of the firms that I was working at had a gym on the first floor. And that was a relatively well-to-do gym. It was a new facility. And it was great because during my lunch breaks, even if it was for 20 minutes, I would go to the gym, get a workout in, and even that in itself really did help, not only for my body, but for my mind. And so that aspect of wellness was extremely important and relevant to my career, especially when you were in an environment where it constantly felt like you were running on fumes at times. The other thing that I did was within my value system, I tried to make changes changes that I was able to not only help myself, but help others. So I was part of what is known as the Associates Committee. And in the Associates Committee, it's two people from every class where you come and try to talk about issues, whether it's pay, work-life balance, whatever the case may be. So for me, at that point in time, wellness was important, but especially on the mental health side, it was becoming more of something that firms were looking at. It still had a stigma to it. And at the firm that I was in, something had happened where it kind of opened the doors for me to bring up at one of the meetings. Why don't we have something for mental health? Whether it's for lawyers, business admin people, or even non-business people that work in the firm, why don't we have an opportunity for them to be able to speak with someone? Our lives are very busy, especially when, you know, our work doesn't often have a stopping point. And sure enough, a pilot program was created, and it was created in our office, and it did well that it was then transferred to every single one of the other offices. So me, with my value system, I try to bring forth change because I'm a firm believer. No matter how long or how little you are in a place, leave it better than you found it. And selfishly, I was trying to benefit from the program as well. So the wellness side of it was another pillar of my value system. Then there is one final pillar to my value system. And this one has been a part of my identity for a long time. What that value system has been and will continue to be has been my faith. I'm a Muslim, a proud Muslim, very vocal about it in the sense that when I worked anywhere, I made sure that they knew I had certain obligations. Obligations that had to be met. And this was not unique to Big Law. When I started my career, even as a CPA, I let them know, hey, on Fridays, I go to Friday prayer. It means that I have to leave, go to a mosque or a local place where Muslims are gathering for Friday prayer. Doesn't mean that I won't get my work done. I'll do it either earlier or stay a little bit longer and finish it. But these are obligations that I have to meet. Or the fact that I pray 5 times a day. I said I need to be able to, you know, find a place to pray. And when I was in Big Law, I had my own office, so it was pretty convenient. I could close my door, pray, and no issue, no harm. During one of the times, I recall, I closed my door, I forgot to lock it, and I was in the middle of prayer, and somebody knocked on the door. And often, you know, I was in the middle of prayer, so I wasn't really thinking about it, thought they would go away, but they opened the door, and of course, I'm in state of prayer, going through the motions, so I can't tell them, hey, give me 5 minutes, I'll be done. Of course, they left, they came back, they apologized. They knew that I was doing something, whether or not they knew that I was praying, but it was something that I was handling my own obligation. And, you know, I had no issues with not being able to practice my faith. Even during the month of Ramadan, I would tell them in advance, month of Ramadan's coming. The way that I normally execute is I change my schedule a little bit, wake up earlier in the morning, start my work, and still be able to fulfill the duties of my obligation with breaking my fast, going to prayer. So that value system stayed with me. And my faith really has helped me get through a lot of things and also be able to accomplish a lot, because I've always felt that I do my part and God will fulfill His part. Now, I know people listening to this, you may be people of various faith, you may not believe in a deity, whatever the case may be. I'm just saying that faith for me, my religion, has been a core value, a constant in my life, and it has helped me navigate. And I remember even with the Associates Committee, when we were moving to a new building, when we had space, I brought up, why don't we have a meditation prayer room? You know, not necessarily just for me, but to benefit anybody who needs a few minutes of refuge from whatever may be going on in their lives. And sure enough, the firm was very receptive. We were able to create a prayer meditation room. And I didn't realize it until later on, but I got a lot of emails from people saying that it really helped and benefited them as well. But just that little action of bringing it up, starting the dialogue helped. The one thing that I will say about my faith and being able to practice it in the firms that I was in Big Law. And this is why I strategically made sure I was there with firms who were going to be okay if an opportunity came itself. But my priorities, which included my religion, would not fit through that door because they would not be receptive for it. And legally, mind you, they can't stop you from practicing your faith. I just want to make sure that's clear. But still, you want to make sure that the people are receptive to it. I will tell you this. I have been extremely grateful, whether it was outside of Big Law when I was working in my other careers or in Big Law, that I have been put in a position, in a place where there were other people who were there to support me, to provide the resources I needed, to be able to fulfill my obligations, to practice my faith. And I have no issues, nothing about that. I've always been very fortunate enough to be in a place, including the firms that I was in, that they were very supportive of it. And I can go on and on about that. So for some of you who were at my previous firms, you played a role into it, I want to say sincerely, thank you. And yes, the firms would tell us, you know, unplug. When you have things going on, let us know. But being able to control our schedule was one of the things that I commonly heard. In addition to the fact that the fight or flight nature of the work did end up taking a toll. You know, as things got super busy, it just felt like there wasn't enough time for us to be able to do the things that we needed. And so during the times that I was having these conversations, because I really was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, because my value system started getting to a point where it was constantly getting dinged. For example, when I was trying to make time for my family, I was rarely present. Or I would have to go answer some emails, or I would have to go, you know, work on things when I got home. You know, when it came to my well-being, even when it came to like working out, there were times where that in itself was not helpful because, you know, again, things would just keep popping up. And then from the perspective of my faith, I just felt like so much of my time was being allocated to work. And sure enough, in Big Law, they pay you a lot of money, but they're also expecting your time. You know, it's at the end of the day, it's a business. And I don't necessarily believe, I'm pretty confident that it was unique to the firms that I worked at. The firms that I worked at were some of the best firms that were out there. The thing that it is that it's related to the industry. It's a nature of the beast. Big Law. That's what it is. They're still working on work-life balance. They're still working on ways to be able to unplug and truly go off the radar. The fact of the matter is that it's going to take some time for it to figure itself out, or it may never be able to do that. Because I tried to create change within the firms that I was working at as it related to my own value system, to make life, especially as a working parent, a little bit easier, to make it so that for the other things that were important, there were, you know, boundaries that are set. Because one of the questions that I imagine you may have asked, well, why not set boundaries? I did set boundaries very early on. Even with people I interviewed, I would tell them, you may be starting a career, learn to set boundaries for the things that are important. But the thing is, it constantly felt like an uphill battle when it came down to these other aspects of my value system. So what do I do? Well, it got to a point where I started having conversations with people. People that were, you know, my colleagues that may have started out with me, people that were older than me. And I just started to ask a lot of questions to see, is it unique to me? Or is it just what's going on with the way that the industry is? And again, it was a lot of the same common things that I heard. I remember talking to a partner that I looked at him as a mentor. And I still look at him as a mentor. And I asked him, I said, hey, you know, I'm going through this battle. Do I want to continue to stay partner track? Do I want to stay and maybe not even consider a partner track? Or do I want to even just completely get out of Big Law? And we had an honest conversation. And one of the things that he told me was, look, Ramin, as you continue to move up, it's not that the stress is going to go away. You know this. The work is going to get much more competitive. It's going to take much more time. It's going to take much more effort. And you have to be aware of the golden handcuffs. The golden handcuffs. I had heard that when I first started working in Big Law. And one of the associates who was a little bit more in her years, had told all of us summer associates, make sure that the golden handcuffs don't trap you. And what does that basically mean? It basically means that you get paid so much money that you end up getting used to a certain lifestyle and you want to continue that because, well, for the most part, the money is good enough. And I told myself early on that if it ever became about the money, that I was pulling out. For a while, for the longest while, the fact that I was working in renewables, the fact that I was working in energy, made me realize that yes, I'm getting paid a lot, but I'm also putting a good product out there. But then it got to a certain point where that in itself wasn't enough for me to want to stay. It just really became about the money. And I realized that that was not why I wanted to stay in Big Law. So I got out. Now, why didn't I just go to another firm? Why didn't I just go in-house? Why did I decide that I wanted to retire at 36? Well, the short answer to that is I was working at pretty awesome firms. And so I realized that if I went to another firm, I jumped ship, what was that really going to do? I interviewed specifically for certain firms that had good reputations. When I interviewed, the people were down to earth. You know, they were receptive to allowing change to happen. So jumping ship wouldn't have helped. Going in-house, I just felt like it was going to be a lot of the same. It's just, it was going to be in-house in terms of the work. I realized for me that it really came down to a few things. One, my kids. Now, I remember saying that when I initially had kids, when I initially had my son, it just made me want to do more of the same, to do more, to succeed more. As my other kids also were born, I just realized I really wanted to be an active parent. My dad, who we have an amazing relationship, and he's been able to share so much about the struggles he went through, especially when we came in as refugees. And his biggest thing was he felt that he was not able to be there for us. And it's not because he didn't want to. His hands were really tied. And he said, Ramin, if I could go back, the one thing that I would do a lot more of is spend more time with you all. Find ways to be able to do that. And I just know that was wishful thinking because he wasn't going to be able to. But he said, for you, one thing I will tell you, your kids are young. Be there for them. And this rang loud and clear for me because for me, really, I would see my kids at the most 30 minutes to an hour, if that. Or if I was doing things with them, it was very hard to stay present because I had X, Y, and Z matter to tend to. So for me, I realized my children at the end of the day, they're going to get grown up. They're going to be the future leaders. And for me, I realized that that is where I needed to invest a lot of my time in. Now, could I have worked somewhere else? Could I have done something else? Certainly I could have. But I just realized that why shouldn't I, if I'm able to, find a way to retire? Because there was numerous times where I was having conversations with my colleagues and we dreamt about just being able to retire. And I said, why retire in my 60s or 70s? At that point, my kids are going to be much older, probably my health, who knows where it's going to be, and who knows if I'm going to even be able to reach that point in time. So that was one aspect of it. Two, I realized that I didn't want so much of my life to be allocated just to work. Yes, it's good. It's necessary to have financial stability. It's important to be able to provide for my family. And with me deciding to leave Big Law and also deciding to retire, I was not going to put that in jeopardy. But as we'll talk about in the next episode, when we start talking about the question that was most asked, how was I able to do it? I'll talk about, well, certain changes that had to be made. But I just realized that I wanted to be able to allocate time differently. And part of that also had to do with my own faith. One of the things that I realized was I was getting to a point where I was not able to spiritually grow. Yes, I was fulfilling the tenets and obligations that is required by my faith. But I just realized that more and more of my time was being allocated only to work. And I just looked at it as all I'm doing is exchanging for more money, more of my time. And I just realized that that wasn't the path that I wanted to take forward. And so by retiring, I decided that I was going to be able to have more control of my schedule, more control of my time. And on top of that, I was just going to be able to take more of a relaxed approach to life. Most of us as lawyers, we're type A individuals. The vast majority of us are type A. And we like things a certain way, and it shows up in our work. It shows up in how we do things, especially when it comes to big law. And I just realized that it got to a point where I wanted to have a more slow-paced life. But the thing about it is it's a lot of reconditioning because I was not used to that. I'm still not used to that. I'm still working through it. But I realized that I needed a period of time, and I don't know how long that time is, for me to be there for my family, be there to spiritually grow, and also make sure that my well-being was in check. Where this journey is going to take me at this point, I'm not sure. Am I happy with the decisions I've made so far? Yes. Were the decisions that I made easy? Not at all. And I'll talk about that more when we get into the how. But I realize that one way or another, there is going to be a sacrifice that has to be made. And I just didn't want to wait until it was much later in my life for me to look back at this time period and realize that there were ways that I could make changes, but I couldn't because I feared that I was not going to be successful, that I was going to fear not being able to provide for my family, that I was going to fear not being able to have that type of money coming in again. I realized that if all else fails, I'll find a way back. But the more courageous thing for me to do was to make those hard decisions where I redefined my view of success and I used my core values as a way to be able to navigate. So on the next episode, we're going to get into the how aspect of it, the question that I get asked the most. But the why is really important because otherwise the how is not going to be able to happen. Again, thank you for listening to me, staying on this journey, and we'll talk again very soon. My name is Ramin. Please catch me on Instagram at unlawyerlywithramin. Check us out on our website, unlawyerly.com. or on YouTube. If you liked what you heard, you want to leave comments, please do so. You want to share it with others, please feel free to do so. And until next time, my name is Ramin, and it's been Unlawyerly.